It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here in Phoenix, Arizona, RBN Network from the studios of Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com, FreedomsPhoenix.com. Today, we're going to go inside La Machine. Let me tell you what the machine is. The one thing that we have been able to do over the years is we have contacts everywhere. And we just cultivate, you know, we're not looking, you know, certainly I'm not, you know, I'm not looking for the, you know, the guys with all the shiny badges, you know, the people that, you know, have the titles and 15 gazillion initials after their name. A lot of times, you know, they're just mouthpieces for the machine. What happens when you have somebody that's on the front lines? What happens? You want to know about what's going on in the IRS? You want to get one of the IRS collection guys like Joe Bannister. You know, goes around with a gun. He's like, oh, heck no. You know, Sherry Jackson, you know, saying, yeah, I was inside. You know, I found out, oh, let me tell you what's up. Then you have, a lot of times you'll have people that are the golf caddies or the valets. You know, I heard them say, you know, a lot of the scandals going on Washington and everything, you know, we're everywhere. Well, one of the other things is, you know, in the healthcare industry, we're going into this socialized medicine, this fascist, whatever you want kind of medicine it is. Who's going to be on the front lines in this? Well, of course, doctors and nurses and so on, the insurance industry. But then you're going, okay, well, what can they tell us? Well, not a lot. I mean, you know, a lot of the times we need to find out what's going on from the people that have already worked in such a system. Well, one of the people that we've been able to work with over the years, and we call up and say, hey, you know, come tell us what's going on, various different things. You know, certainly when you have disabled or injured or recovering Iraq veterans, you know, where do they go? They go into the VA. How does the system work? Who gets and doesn't get treatment? You know, what kind of quality care do they get? Based on what? You want to know what kind of healthcare system we're going to get, you know, when the government's in charge of it, all you got to do is look at the VA, Veterans Administration hospitals. Well, we have a gentleman that's inside that system. He's going to go by Zylar, you know, just because he'd like to maintain his job. So we just call him Zylar, and I've known him for a long time, and he's been a fan of the show and Freedom's Phoenix, and, you know, he gets it. We've had him on my show before, on Charles's show before. We have a lot of fun. But he knows from inside the system where we're at. Where are we? We are going into a whole new era that is going to be much more widely resisted of this kind of government action. But in the meantime, it creates, even though the pie shrinks, not as much revenue out there, it's going to get directed to certain people, special interests, lobbyists, that are able to control the machine of government. A good example is when you're talking about, you know, the empire going and getting cheap oil. Well, when it costs $130-something dollars a barrel over what the cost of the oil is to go get the cheap oil, you're not really saving any money, but somebody's making it. That's what this is all about. Who gets to make it? Are we saving money on healthcare? Are we more efficient? Are we getting better service? That's not what it's about. We're going to talk about it when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Zylar from inside the VA.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you. I've got to break free. God knows.
Oh, God knows.
Oh,
I just want to break free. Can we break free? Let's break free a little bit for some freedom. Well, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, that's what we're going to try and do. But first, let me tell you what's going on. Zylar's in. Talk about what you can expect from government health care. Now, and this is, you know, this is what he does for a long time, many years. This is what he does. We've talked about it before. I haven't talked to him about it for, probably at least a year or two. So we're going to go ahead and get an update, see what's up. But I tell you, we were going to do this tomorrow, and we did it today because I got an invitation to be keynote speaker at a tea party in Las Vegas. And it's being promoted on the radio there, and it's going to be a big woo-hoo, okay? So I'm going to go up there and, hail the peoples, going, ho-ho, let me tell you what's really up. So it'll be fun. You know, a lot of these guys are doing this up there are the Ron Paul guys. That's why they wanted us to go to Searchlight to kind of go, look, man, this is always a Love-Volution Tea Party kind of deal. You want to play? We'll play. So we made sure our presence was known. So from that, it kind of sparked another big Tea Party thing they're doing in Las Vegas tomorrow on April 15th, tax day, and I came to mind. So I'm going to go up there, and they'll have some congressmen and different stuff, and I got to do my spiel again. Hey, you know all this stuff these guys said? You know, I'm not with any of them. I just want to make this really clear. But so we'll have some fun. Well, that means that Jet will be with you in the morning on Friday, and I'll pick one of my favorite shows to rerun tomorrow because he's up visiting with his mother in Prescott. So what we're going to do today is we'll have Zylar. You know, get the wrong name here. But what I did want to talk to you today about originally was housing. You know, the economy and different things. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play. You know, just kind of sum it up. Because Meredith Whitney, she's been around for a long time. She was the one that called the failure of all the big banks here. And so she was screaming it, going, man, can't you guys do math? This is the math. This is what's going to happen. And there's nothing you can do about it. Well, it happened. You know, do we get great pleasure, Neon, I told you so? Or you just, you know, thank your lucky stars if you were listening. Well, I want you to listen again to this. It's from housingdoom.com. It's on Freedom's Phoenix right now. Home prices falling. Here we go again. Oh, we're in a recovery. Oh, I bottomed out. Oh, they're going up. No, it's not. Okay? Can I emphasize this enough? My wife is in real estate. I was in real estate. We, sell real estate. I got access to all the data and so on. I mean, you can't lie with what's actually happening. I mean, you can see the flow. You can see how many houses have been put on sitting there listing. You can see how many have been taken off. You can see what they're going for. You sit there and look at you get access to the data to see what their mortgage is, what they're asking for. Are they short sales? Are they foreclosed on? Are they being done by bank owned? Are they selling them? Are they doing what? They're not. They're not even foreclosing anymore. Why? Well, I can tell you one thing. They're waiting until the next fiscal year. You know, the finishing contract wouldn't be prudent at this juncture, which is this fiscal year. They're going into the next fiscal year, which will be beginning of July. So I could see what's happening. All the stuff on the balance sheets of the banks, man, they're just like, oh, how in the heck are we going to get it? There's got to be a government program somewhere or something. Get a loan from I don't know, there's nobody left to get a loan from. India's taking all their U.S. dollars and buying gold bars with it. China's doing the same thing. I don't know what the heck they're doing. They're going over to the Chinese and the one. And, we have stories that will be coming up today. I made a list of a bunch of stuff I wanted to put up. Some of the editors are putting them up. And, one of them is Geithner, U.S. Treasury Secretary, saying, hey, well, we worked that deal with, China. Yeah, it's like we get to set the interest rate on this. What? What? Do they know this? Well, they came here, and the prime minister, head guy from China said, you know what? You ain't in charge no mo. Is he right? You know, this is, we haven't even got to the first shoe dropping yet. You know, the second shoe hadn't dropped. What, are you kidding me? We just got to smell the smelly sock of the first one. They ain't dropped that one yet. Here it comes. Meredith Whitney again. Now, I get this from housingdoom.com. We've had a twist on here quite a bit. I want you to just, it's only a couple of minutes, but just so you heard it from me. Then we'll get in with Zylar here about what we can expect from national health care. Here we go.
You have had some bearish comments about the housing market recently, thinking that maybe we're in for another leg down. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts there. Do you think that we have not seen the bottom yet in terms of housing prices?
I have said and believe very strongly that we'll have a double dip in housing. So what that has will mean is that a lot of the assumptions involving all of the banks asset values and reserving will have to be reset. So what I mean by the double dip is you can see a clear correlation of nothing under 100% of the loan modifications and halting foreclosures or significantly slowing foreclosures and the stabilization of home prices. So many people think that home prices have turned a corner. The fact is the amount of foreclosures that have yet to take place will present a very big challenge. So when you look at whatever you think stability is in terms of home prices, though a lot of the markets haven't been tested, so there's very little transaction volume going on. When you see what I expect to be a supply jam come to the market, you'll see how home prices take a significant leg lower.
Which will obviously impact
it's just the numbers. It's just the way the numbers look. I mean, non-accruals have more than doubled on bank balance sheets inside of a year. That non-accruals are people who haven't made a payment in over 120 days. That's just that those will move to foreclosures, I think, by inside of the summer, certainly.
Do you think fundamentally the business model in banking is going to change and we're going to see new kinds of companies sort of come to the fore, maybe in different aspects of the industry a little bit?
It already is. So a lot of the unintended consequences of the CARD Act, for example, are pushing consumers outside of the credit system. And so you will see entrants to serve that unbanked or underbanked community emerge all over the place. So I think you'll see a big growth engine in payday lenders and all the lenders that you really don't want to see in this type of environment. Payday lenders, check cashing, prepaid services. It's going to get a lot more expensive to be poor in this country, and that's a sad consequence of some of this regulatory change that's taken place.
Yep, and that's on CNN Money. You know, so what do I do right now? I'm sitting here right now. You know, I got to send this to my son and daughter-in-law. I go, you know, I keep telling them that, of course, you're never a prophet in your own land. But I'm going, look, you guys are right, you're ready, making offers on these houses and everything, and you're wondering why months have gone by. You know, they were hoping to get a house before my first granddaughter was born. They're 5 months pregnant with the second one. They're probably not going to get moved into a house until it's born. I'm going, why are they not selling these homes? You're making an offer, they accept them, the bank goes through. You know what did Meredith Whitney say? She goes, they're not processing this stuff. They're not, because then they have to reset the value on their balance sheets and show what, you know, the assets of these big banks have as they keep gobbling each other up. You know, what they got is worth like half of whatever it is they say they got. They're waiting for something, and then the bottom's going to drop out. So what happens if they buy a home now? A home that was $300,000 are now going for, you know, $140,000. You can get, you know, a nice home for $200,000, you know, a 20-year-old home, a 25-year-old home, which lasts a long time, except for the roof here in Arizona. You know, they last. Homes last a long time here. You don't have all this rain and stuff. And they're made of block a lot of times. So you have them sitting there. You know, it's a 25-year-old home, a nice neighborhood, they got mature trees and so on, $200,000, $250,000. You know, you can get something decent, all of a sudden, boom, they're going for $90,000, $80,000. What happens when they hit down to 40, 50, 60, and they just bought it? They will be underwater for an additional $20,000 or so. Don't do it. But, oh, we got another baby coming. We got to get it. You know? They're tired of living, you know, with her mother or in an apartment, or they sure as heck don't want to come stay with me. But, you know, they're welcome. You know, they spend a lot of time there anyway. But, you know, the thing is that I understand. I was young. I know how 1 year is an eternity, you know, and how now it's a blip on the radar. Now it's all perspective. It's all perception. Now, this is what's happening. We are in trouble. And Arizona and Phoenix and Nevada and so on, and Florida, Southern California, more than most. We have not seen the bottom yet. We don't know what bottom is. We're going into the greatest depression. Okay, consider yourself warned. Now we got this healthcare thing monkey put on our back. And that's what we'll talk about when we come back in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, don't stop believing here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Zeidler in studio. You know, the one thing I want to do is, you know, what do you think about some of this stuff, Zeidler? I mean, you know, we got, you've been living in the Valley here a long time. You got any experiences on this?
Oh, sure. Recently, I've been driving around town, and I've been seeing these signs called Tio Rico.
What's Tio Rico?
Rich uncle in Spanish. So these people are offering money to the Hispanic population under the name Tio Rico. I haven't investigated it, but that's another service.
Well, who is? I mean, is it a business? Or
I would think it's a
on
business.
Craigslist or what?
Where I see it on billboards.
Oh.
Just driving around, see it out on the street. Tio Rico.
I guess that's a cultural thing, having a rich uncle. Okay, I get it. All right, well, yeah, you know, the check cashing thing. And then, of course, they want to do legislation saying that, oh, you charge too much interest. Well, you give them a title of your car, and they give you money, and you're doing payday loans and everything. You know, that's bad. You can't do that. I'm going, nobody's making these people do it. I mean, it should be honest about it. Yeah, I'm going to do this. This is, in big, bold letter, this is what's going to happen. And then when it happens, they go, I'm like, well, what did you think was going to happen? You know, and it's just like with these housing, you know, the mortgages that they gave out to these people, these ARMs, the adjustable rate mortgages, you know, the subprimes, all these people. You think it's not the same thing? You know, they're going to what? And they go, oh, I don't want to pay anymore. Okay. Well, you know, you suffer the consequences. And what are those consequences? A lot of times it's going to be a foreclosure. But they're not foreclosing. And you have this buildup of inventory and more and more and more at the peak, right at the peak of the real estate boom here in Arizona. I was announcing this one number that I had found out. My wife was doing some research, and I'm going, this one number, I was scared the crap out of you. At the peak, 40%. Of the tens of thousands of all the multiple listing service of all the homes that were for sale in Arizona that were for sale. Here, these houses are for sale. 40% of them were vacant at the peak. How many are vacant now? What do you think's going on? Oh, yeah. We got to fill those 40% first that you couldn't fill during the peak. And on top of that, an economic downturn, a depression, or whatever you want to call it, plus all these other foreclosures, plus all the inventory that's on bank owned, that's plus going to, but green shoots. Yeah, the weeds in the driveway. You know, I'm going, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. That's what I mean. When you go to freedomsphoenix.com, we do uncovering the secrets, exposing the BS. And what do you do with this information? Hey, man, that's up to you. You know, let me tell you who you're not going to blame. Right here, okay? I did my part. I was not lying to you. You may not have liked it. You may not have liked the truth. You may not agree with my opinion. You may not, I think we should, and you know, whatever. But I'm telling you, you know, I get absolutely no pleasure going, Neon, I freaking told you so, when this stuff happens. Get food. Start buying food. Storing food. Food. This is all going to come down to food. You think I'm kidding? It is going to be, can I keep breathing in and out? We are not going to stop this thing. We're just going to have to survive it. Well, one of those other things that we're going to survive is actual physical, my body's not wanting to breathe in and out anymore. I got to go to hospital. You know, how am I going to survive this thing? You know, so Morgan, I mean, just off the top of your head, just to get us going here. You know, we got a couple minutes in this segment. Tell me what's up, man. I mean, if we're dealing with health care, like I don't know of a closer example than the veterans hospitals. I mean, how long have you been in a veteran hospital? I don't know how specific we want to get. In that industry, okay?
In the industry, I've been there about 6.5 years now.
Okay, 6.5 years. You've been through a few cycles.
Yes.
You know, you've been through two different administrations. You know, has anything – that's a good thing to ask. Has anything changed from the W administration to the O administration?
There were some initial things when – the current administration came in that they wanted to reduce the amount of benefits or start charging money, and that was shot down by the various veterans associations and things like that because they wanted
to. Obama administration really wanted to cut back? I mean, there was a money-saving thing? Or
they wanted to switch them to Medicare. They wanted to switch the veterans over to Medicare so that the Medicare side was paying for all of the veterans care.
Okay. Now this is interesting right here. Medicare, which is a government subsidized kind of medical whatever thing, and the Veterans Administration, I would imagine that the Veterans Hospital is kind of a totally separate department. I mean, you're a veteran, you have need of medical care, you come in there, you get care. If it's Medicare, then you're probably, because I know my son-in-law is involved in structuring financial stuff with senior citizens, and part of that is getting their Medicare extra supplemental kind of something. He was explaining it to me because you have X amount of dollars that you get from the government, and if you want, you can kind of, you know, I guess shop private vendors of how Medicare is administered. Is that true?
Yes, Medicare, I believe, is administered on the state level through the Health and Human Services, and the Veterans Department is its own department under the government, has its own secretary.
So they want to take all the veterans here and put them over here and make them the same as everybody else in some kind of whatever the heck they're going to do.
That was about a year ago. And
I can see the mentality behind it, though. I'm like, oh, heck no. We don't want veterans to have their own kind of special interest lobby take care of us. You maimed us in your de la whatever. You know, oh, no. We're going to put you in with the rest of the sheep. Really? See, it's going to be interesting. Stay there.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat. Get over it.
Yeah! Get over it. Get over it here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock Zadalar from the VA, inside the VA, finding out how, you know, he's going to be the guy taking care of you, or if he's even allowed to. Are you even going to get before him to be taken care of? You know, this is what's what we got to look forward to here. You know, there's a bunch of stuff we may get into in the next hour, a lot of things going on. You know, I was telling you yesterday or day before about my visit to New Orleans and to what they call it, Hattiesburg in Mississippi. I was speaking at the LP Mississippi convention, and a lot of the young people that had gone down to hear Dr. Paul speak came to the after party, and they were telling us all about all the little shenanigans that went on. You look at the top of Freeman's Phoenix, I just put it up. They're getting harassed, man. What happened? How did they, you know, it's 439 to 438, was it really? You know, Mitt Romney versus Romney. Right now, also, they have a poll up there for the 2012 election. It's within 1 point. You know, Barack Obama's at, I don't know, was it 43 and Ron Paul 42, and he's not even running? Or 42, 41, whatever. It's close. And I'm going, we are in interesting times. But one of those things is, you know, we have an entire segment of our population, this baby boomer thing, they got enough of their high fructose corn syrup diet and they're messed up. they got all kinds of pills. You watch commercial television, man, I'm going to do that sometime. I keep thinking about it. I'm going to take all these commercials and take the audio off of all of the warnings. Could cause this. Go on for 3-4 minutes of all the crap that's going to happen to you if you take the pill. I'm like, man, you got to have a pill for the side effects from the pill, which is they got a pill for that too. I guarantee you. You know, so I'm going, this is man. I mean, man. So we were talking about Morgan, Zylar. Oh, man. I knew I'd do that. Zylar has a, we'll cut it out in the archive. Zylar has an experience inside the machine of the Obama administration came in and they wanted to take the veterans and they wanted to put them on Medicaid, Medicare, what is it?
One of the two. I don't keep track of them too well.
So they, and the purpose was is just, I don't know, they wanted to eliminate the VA eventually? I mean, are they looking to...
It's a large expense in the budget, and the VA does not have to respond to Medicare and Medicaid. We do follow their rules, but we are not responsible to those rules, which makes and there's a whole...
Rules? What rules? Don't let people die? I mean, what?
How they're treated, what they're treated with, who treats them, recovery, the amount of money, things like that.
All right. So if I'm a veteran, you know, which the hospital is right down the street from here. I mean, it's within less than a mile down the street. And you go, okay, so I have a need. You know, I'm feeling kind of peaked. I go there. What determines whether I get treatment or not?
What did you... Get out of the military with an honorable discharge?
Absolutely, man. Okay, I'm a good guy.
Then you go in and you get seen and you get rated. You get a rating as far as your injuries that occurred while you were in the military. And that rating is based on a percentage from 0 to 100%.
But you don't get any coverage unless it's directly related to your service in the military?
You can get additional services, but it's aid and care. It's not you're not prioritized as being... a service-connected rating.
Okay, so a rating determines whether you're at the front of the line or not.
For some care.
All right, man. I'm going to dissect this VA thing because this is the kind of care that you can expect with this Obamacare deal. All right? I just want you to understand is whatever he says about, well, that doesn't – I'm going, no, it does. Okay? Whatever he's going to be saying, I'm going to keep focusing on how veterans are taken care of, and you just equate that. That's what you're looking at, all right? I mean, I'm just, you know, here it comes, all right? All right. So let's say I'm a dishonorably discharged vet. They don't like me. I don't get – what happens? Their life sucks?
Life sucks. You don't get service.
You don't get nothing. Dang it, you need to have honorable discharge or you're just – you're going to join the Obamacare thing. What's the difference? Okay, so – so for me to get care, I would have been in the service. I'm honorably discharged. I am entitled. You sent me over. I did your thing, and I played by the rules enough that I get honorable discharge. And, you know, where's my goodies? So I go in there, and I say, I am ill. They go, okay. Well, first you get rated whether the first question is this ailment or illness or whatever connected to your service in whatever? You're in Vietnam and it's an Agent Orange thing and they say, nope, that doesn't exist. You don't get it anymore. Or they do or they've changed policy.
They put dates on when it expires. You have to apply by this time or it no longer is effective. If you're 100% service connected, you're at the top of the line. You're at the top of the food chain. You get to walk into the clinics and go right to the front of the line, things like that.
Okay, now that include medical, I mean, like, you know, physiological problems, or you're talking just physical injuries? You had your arm nerve damage ripped off, whatever, blown up, you know, or the kind of combination, what?
It's a matrix that they follow, and they don't really publish very well, but if you are 100% service connected, that means you get a pension, and you get front-of-the-line treatment for most of the areas.
So I am in a situation to where I'm going in, they rate me, then they say, you're going to get care based on this rating that I get, and then what care is available to a veteran? I mean, you know, I what? You know, the rate, it's service-related, if I can say it's related, radiation poisoning, it's chemical, it's biological, I took the vaccines, I, you know, whatever it is, you know, they're going to say, okay, you get front of the line, we'll treat to till we run out of money. I mean, is there some limit?
No, no limit. If you're service connected, then they treat you for anything related to that service connection. If you need a knee replacement, you either find a VA doctor that can replace it or they send you to an outside agency to replace it.
Okay, so there's no budget. I mean, it's not like THX 1138 with Robert Duvall. You got the robots chasing him. He's trying to escape from, you know, the collective. And they go and they go, oh, we exceeded the budget. Let him go.
There is a limit or something, but it's not discussed well. And it has to be approved by several levels of doctors and administrators.
Based on some kind of something somebody said for something.
Yes.
Which is going to change whenever they feel like it. All right.
And it changes yearly.
Okay. No, well, I'm wondering also if you're approved for this and you go in, are you able to supplement it? I mean, can these guys go, ah, screw it, I'm going to go over here and, you know, get my medical marijuana from, you know, my buddy over here, or am I going to, I'm going to go over here and get supplemental care from this doctor I'm willing to pay a couple $100? Is that legal?
That's legal, but you run the risk of offending the doctors or offending the system by doing that and not getting all, if you show up at the hospital and all of a sudden you pop positive on your urine test, the doctors will start backing off of what they're doing for you.
Okay. So let's go ahead and say I'm not injury related to my service. I am a veteran. I was promised some kind of coverage, health. I know guys that have retired from the military. You know, that's one of their big things. I get all kinds of care of, you know, a lot. They go in and they need, you know, whatever the heck it is. How are they treated?
They are run through a rating as well, and they do a means test to find out how much income they have, valuable assets, wife's income, what you have in the bank, everything like that. They ask this information.
Whoa, time out. As a veteran that gets out and is honorable discharge and you have, you know, all these, you know, VA benefit kind of stuff, you are a veteran, is based on how much money you have? I mean, it's not like a set thing. You don't qualify for something. It's just like a backup plan or something?
Correct.
Okay, so you got to be, you know, indigent, poor, I don't got no money, and I got a cough.
Well, they have their own setup based on like poverty level determinations and things like that. How many kids you have, how many dependents you have, what your income is, what you have in the bank. And then you go into a classification and you have to pay for the services based on that classification.
And why would I do that as opposed to go to private insurance? Because I can't be turned away, because it's cheaper, because, I mean, what? Is it better?
In some respects, it may be better. In some respects, it may be a little worse, but you can't be turned away if you're qualified to receive services.
But you're still going to have to come up with some payment. Okay. What is the quality of service? I mean, in the VA, I'll tell you, you know, my awareness of the VA hospital there. When we had a pizza restaurant, we would deliver there all the time. I mean, it was within, you know, 300 yards of where our restaurant was. So we get a lot of orders for it. I mean, you probably ate some of my pizza, okay? So
probably.
And you definitely saw the coupons. But the so what we would do is we go over there and I'd see what was being done and what the people were doing and how. And I'll tell you the one thing that struck me: there were always lines. And the first floor you go in, there were lines, and you could tell there were older veterans. You know, they'd have their, you know, green jackets on, maybe some camo this, and the beards or the Vietnam era kind of stuff. You know, I'd see lines, and then a lot of these guys, you know, they'd stop by a restaurant, get sodas, made friends with some of them, and tell me their stories and such. And some of them even died in the hospital there. So I'm semi-familiar with the facility itself and that there are lines, but I don't really know how it's perceived as the quality of care someone would get. Then you have a war like Iraq and Afghanistan, and you have lots of people coming in with, I mean, major injuries, because it used to be that when you had a bomb go off next to you, you'd be dead, okay? There was no getting around that. But now with some of the protective gear, you got external injuries, you know, that are just, you know, arms and legs blown off, and head trauma is one of the big ones, you know, just a concussion. So I'm wondering, what kind of injuries are you now, instead of just, you know, the older veterans that are coming in trying to get care, they're poor, they need help, or they have injuries related to, or chemicals or viruses that they got from injections, and I mean, all kinds of stuff like that. But I mean, let's talk about the guys supposed to be at the top of the line that come in with actual injuries. How are they treated?
They would go to the emergency room, of course, if the... And, well, most people end up at the emergency room to receive care because they don't really have clinic structures so that you can walk in. Their walk-ins, they want to direct to the emergency room, where the most sick, and the emergency room doesn't function on ratings, it functions on who's sickest. If you're coming in with a heart attack, you get treated right now. If you can't breathe, you get treated right now. If you have a hangnail, you may sit there for 12 or 16 hours.
Okay. So there isn't really kind of a doctor relationship. There's like a triage. You walk in the building, you're getting triaged every single time.
Correct. Okay. Your appointments in the clinics, if you make it there on time, you'll get seen by your doctor.
Oh, okay. So you can make an appointment. You come in for whatever kind of care.
If you can make it 3 months in advance.
Wow. 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 So does this have a lot to do with... you know, what you'd expect in socialized medicine around the world? I mean, is this kind of how it's done?
Well, one of the things that I see very commonly, and the patients will talk to us about it, is that the number of appointments the doctor sees in a day is limited. And I've learned from inside sources that that's an 18-patient-a-day number. 18 patients in an 8-hour period, which is just over 2 patients an hour.
Why? Just because... because they can?
Just because they can.
All right. All right. You know, 18 patients a day, and you have a nation that's going to be going to government for health care. I'm wondering, I mean, what are they going to do, draft doctors into national service? Don't laugh. I mean, you know, they already started talking about it.
How do you do that? How do you tell me that I have to go to work for you?
With a gun, that's how. You know, I don't know how do they do that. Let me think for a second. You know, there's going to be some incentive for something.
So I become a doctor at the National Healthcare Clinic, and I only have to see 18 patients a day, and if I can tell them, okay, you were half a minute late, come back in 3 months because you violated the rule.
Because that happens? That happen?
It does.
Oh.
Not all the time.
Okay. All right. All right. Quality of care. I mean, tell me, I mean, you have people that coming in with, you know, whatever it is. We made it through the gauntlet. We jumped all over the hurdles. We went through the tunnels. We threaded the needle. I get into a room. I have people taking care of me. What's the staff like? What kind of care are we expecting?
The VA is pushing for very good care of the veterans. The frontline people tend to be very kind, very patient, have a desire to serve the veterans. We want to see them taken care of.
But
the services are not always there that we can deliver that in a timely fashion. There are some things we have to direct them to either other VAs or outside agencies to take care of.
I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, dialysis or something? I mean...
Dialysis is one area. We have limited dialysis facility here, but often we have to direct people to the outside. You can't get a heart bypass operation at this VA. You would have to be directed to another facility. If it was emergent, we would have to transfer you to another facility within the valley, and if they could schedule it, you might go to Tucson.
Okay. What... your concern, I mean, we were talking about this, is that your concern is that this is the kind of a healthcare system that the entire country is going to be subjected to. I mean, is this, you know, this is the level of care that you're worried about?
Not only that, but like in a flattened management structure, like I would see in the outside, there would only be three people between me and the director of the hospital. In the VA, there's five.
You know, I want to spend some time on this so you understand what you're dealing with and how we can prepare ourselves for alternatives, because you're going to need alternatives. Things are going to happen. There are alternatives, and if there aren't, there will be. It's a free market thing that always comes around.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
Yeah, you're gonna declare your independence. It's always the same. Same old story, same old song and dance, same, repeated, round and round and round. Here we go. And it's all about you're going to either go and be independent. You're going to be able to go and provide for yourself. You're going to be able to be autonomous and off the grid and go up to and have a voluntary contract with another human being that willing to provide you with widgets or services or whatever. And you go up and you say, ooh, that's a mighty nice white smock you got on there and a little, you know, sheepskin thing up on the wall and everything. And I got a hangnail. Okay, we can take care of that. We do it. Or you're going to be going to a building. You're going to go to a system. You're going to go to bureaucracies and bureaucrats and people that are government paid kind of sit there and, you know, in big rubber stamps and denied, allowed, limited, doing whatever. They're going to decide based on a system. Now, we talked to Szilard, and you're saying that when you go in to get ranked and so on, you follow, although the VA is not obligated by or something, but I'm sure you get your wrist whacked if you don't do something, you know, unless some supervisor says thou shalt or shalt not. It's just they always want to reserve the power to something. But they got a guideline of the Medicaid, Medicare kind of thing. They're going, you know, it's another government thing. Might as well, they already got it all written down. Might as well do that. So you go ahead and go through that. And they tell you what you can and can't do based on whatever. Now, I know something about this because my daughter and my daughter-in-law both are HIPAA medical coders. You know, they all these doctors are like bookkeepers for all these doctors. When they did HIPAA, it was health, what does it stand for? Privacy Protection Act or something. I mean, it was
Healthcare Act, Privacy and Portability Act.
Yeah, it was all about whatever they say it's about. It's the opposite. They go, we got to have this, you know, to protect your privacy. You know, no one should be able to see your medical records except the government. Everybody in government. They got a shiny badge. They get to see every little old thing. So, but when they provide coverage for insurance submitting and on, somebody puts a code in. Well, they're just bookkeeper, like put the code in whatever the doctor said or the office and so on and get their books all straight for collecting from the insurance, getting the money and so on. But, you know, there is somebody that originates that number. And I'll guarantee you it's a nurse, it's somebody at the front, it's a doctor. Somebody is going to say this is a number that will – that number is what's going to provide you – certain amount of care in a certain way, and then they're going to be rationing that number. You can't do too much of that number. That number costs too much. Get another number. Make it a different number that'll do the kind of number. We're going to be slinging around numbers instead of having a personal relationship with a doctor that's going to be there to, you know, keep you well or to make you well. You know, we're going to be managing numbers and not people. This is what collectives do. They don't know anything other than a number. And they want to collectivize this more and more in big giant piles of pieces of paperwork or computer programs that have numbers. And you say, you know what? This number right here, this one right here, it's costing us a lot of money. You know, we don't have any more rationing for that number. Now, you come in with this ailment, you're going to die. Man, that sucks to be y'all. We're going to call off that number. That number, that chute goes over this way. It's a cattle car. You think I'm kidding? This is how this stuff is done. You're managed by a number, and you are not allowed as an individual to bypass a number. So what do they do? What kind of alternatives do you think are going to come out of this in healthcare? You know, people are going to want to get healthcare from something, doing something somewhere.
Back to the witch doctors?
I vote for witch doctor, especially if they got, good stuff to witch doctor me with. You know, maybe I do. Well, you know, when we come back, there are alternatives. You know, first is keep well, don't get sick. I mean, that might have something to do with it. Can we eliminate high fructose corn syrup? You know, that's the first thing. But you got to do it yourself. What, you want a law? You just do it, man. Information. We're going to give you some more information on how you can stay alive and thrive here in what used to be America. We'll be right back.